You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast. I'm Sarah Marshall, and in this podcast, we'll look at how to sort out the social media chaos. We'll hear from two journalists and those behind two platforms that can help you in finding the signal in the noise.
I'm David Wiley, also known as General Dave on Twitter. I'm an editor for Breaking News, and I work across all the properties in the Breaking News brand, the mainstay of which is our Breaking News account on Twitter, and our other accounts, which cover the UK, global politics, and our Breaking Storm account, which covers severe weather in the US and abroad.
I spoke to him this morning to find out how they're tackling today's social media chaos.
Well, mainly what we're following today is if there's going to be any protests across the Arab world or in any other hotspots, especially around US embassies. So I like to actually have a little bit of chaos so that I can sort. I don't like to be too regimented in my lists. I like to see several countries at once and then make my own choice about what I want to zero in on. So my advice to people would be not to strictly limit themselves to a list of countries, but to try and build up people in all of the countries and then have people to go to as soon as something erupts in one of them or in any of them. You should be able to see the whole picture, but then choose to zoom in when you want.
And he urges good housekeeping and says never throw away a Twitter list.
Sources and lists, it's incredibly important that people try to be loyal in their own head towards them, that they should keep a good list of them and never really throw away a source, as print or TV or radio journalists would do. You never throw away a source. With turmoil surrounding the US embassies and consulates at the moment, there are people now looking for sources in Yemen and Libya and Egypt who perhaps would have had a great network of sources a year ago during the Arab Spring, who thought, well, the Arab Spring is over, I don't need those sources anymore. And this is a real directive that shows that you do need those sources, that you should keep them, because now people are looking well into the story, what they can find on certain issues, and all they're doing is retracing the work that they did a year or two ago.
Malachy Brown's news editor of Storyful.
Storyful is really the first news agency of the social media age. We're a team of experienced journalists who use tools and technology to separate news from the noise on social media platforms. So if you imagine the number of videos and posts that are going on YouTube, on Facebook and Twitter, we have systems to narrow that down and to filter out what is actionable news from the noise. And the next two steps are to validate that information is correct and that our content is what it says it is. And thirdly, then we deliver that to news organizations, Storyful customers like the New York Times, ABC, France 24, and so on.
Like Dave Wiley from Breaking News, Malachy Brown from Storyful also says lists are key in filtering the chaos.
The most important thing that they can do is to build systems of information and sources around their areas of interest, like we do. For instance, at the moment, I'm looking at a TweetDeck platform with a couple of dozen columns on it on situations that we're monitoring, particularly around the protests at the US embassies around the world. So there are various ways in which you can build these systems. You can use RSS feeds, you can join specialist groups on Facebook, connect with other professionals in your areas of interest on Facebook and on Twitter, subscribe to various accounts that put videos up on YouTube. One of the constraints of Twitter, unfortunately, is that there's a limit to the number of followers you can connect with directly, over 1,000. But you can get around this using Twitter lists, and you can just build several hundred sources onto a country list or a topical list that you're reporting on. And you can organize your Facebook sources, the pages that you subscribe to on Facebook, into Facebook lists as well. So they're some of the tools that we use.
The next tip is search. David Wiley from Breaking News again.
Well, first of all, the best thing to do is keep the search terms simple, because what you're looking for is necessarily directly in line with someone in that area is trying to get out. So if the simplest term in Yemen or Libya or Benghazi is the place name, then that's probably what they're using. They won't be using a controversial hashtag, and they tend not to be using things specific to an event such as US embassy attack or US consulate attack. That's a very kind of journalistic way of dividing something up. So And hashtags and terms, I would, my advice is to keep it as simple as possible, because you should never forget that people are trying to reach you and that they're putting their content out there to be seen for a reason. And really, that can be the best practice for getting them. But another great way is to find someone good, see who they're talking to on their own feed, and then perhaps put them in a list as well and see how the conversation builds up, because people who are good sources tend to also somehow attract other good sources and talk to each other and they share information. If you artificially sit yourself inside the conversation and watch what happens, it gives you another degree of being able to see what's happening.
The lists really provide clues as to what is happening in a particular place and time, and it's a sort of a representative sample. But after that, we would take keywords. We would search through various social media platforms for information and content that match those keywords. And it's very important when you're doing that to put yourself in the citizen journalist's shoes, or the reporter on the ground, their shoes. They may not be describing something in Benghazi as Benghazi, because they take it as a given that their social network, that they, the people that they engage with, know they're in Benghazi. So they might use a street name, they might use the name of a building, they might use a local term. So it's very important to have intelligent systems of monitoring Benghazi or Libya or whatever the situation is, so that you know where you can tap in to find those keywords that you need to be using to search. Using the results of your searches is really important. So if you find something that's outside of your own system of Facebook lists or Twitter users, if you can find a caption that describes something, and even taking that caption, it might be in Arabic, and putting it into Google Translate and translate that into your own language. And Google Translate then allows you to select certain phrases from that original Arabic caption on a photo or whatever it might be. Putting that into search engines and to social media platforms again will yield even further results that are hopefully more localized.
I asked Malachy Brown about useful tools and platforms. Reddit's gained much attention recently, so I wanted to know whether Storyful finds news stories or sources from Reddit.
Reddit is useful. Certainly, it's a forum where people discuss and share trending articles and videos and pictures. We find Google Reader very useful. It allows you to organize RSS feeds from a variety of different sources into folders, and that's really useful as a system of discovery.
As well as TweetDeck and other tools you may be familiar with as a journalist, there are some new platforms launching that can help you filter the noise and find out what's trending. Paul Quigley is CEO and co-founder of NewsWhip.
What we've kind of got out there is a billion people who use Facebook and Twitter, and they're all like little editors. They're sharing content with their friends. And when you harness all of that, you get a lot of little signals pointing towards the important things that are within the news internet.
So NewsWhip Spike looks at those signals. NewsWhip Spike is currently free while it's being tweaked and refined, but come the end of the year, it will be a paid-for tool. I asked Paul Quigley for some examples of when a journalist could find it useful to see what's trending around a particular topic.
If you're doing a story on a given politician at the moment in the presidential election, or on a health issue that's hot at the moment, it can be very helpful to see what people are talking about right now to make sure you don't miss anything that can be incorporated into the story. So it's got a kind of a rounding it out aspect. So if you're going to write a story about Romney, just you can check in on NewsWhip Spike to see what's trending around him at the moment, in case there's been any recent revelations. Also, if you want to find interesting topics to write about within an area like health or an area like science, you can check in to see which of the stories that are kind of big today or big in the last hour, and see if you want to move those stories on or do something with them.
Paul Quigley told us that the platform is in continuous build, with new features being worked on based on feedback and requests from journalists.
We're adding other languages. We're adding Spanish, French and Portuguese over the next few weeks. And it's going to be very useful for seeing what's trending internationally. And for someone, say, who's at the desk, we've got an Africa section, so someone whose beat is Africa can check in very quickly in seconds and see which news stories are spreading fastest in Africa right now or over the last 12 hours to see what's worth covering, what's got the buzz over there.
Editors too need to find the signal in the noise and see what news is gathering attention on social media. Mohamed Nanabay, former head of online at Al Jazeera English, had an epiphany moment when in the newsroom.
The epiphany that I had was when, you know, the Arab Spring had started and we were sitting in the newsroom, and it was the 25th of January 2011. And, you know, we had a big story that we were promoting at the time. It was a long-term investigation that our investigative unit had done on the Palestine Papers. It was the biggest leak of documents from the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. So it was a big story for us. It was a three-part series that we were running out during over that time. You know, as we were pushing this out, we were looking at some real-time data. And I very quickly saw that both on Twitter and on our website, the audience had moved away from the story that we were promoting as an organization and very much interested in the Egypt story. And at the time, many people weren't covering that story. So, you know, in response, we quickly reconfigured our homepage, started deploying our resources to pay attention to that story. So, you know, that was sort of where the first seeds of this product were born, saying, well, if we pay attention to the social data, we can get ahead in terms of our news and in terms of how we're putting it out there.
He's since left Al Jazeera and is co-founder of Signal Noise.
So fundamentally what Signal Noise is, we are ultimately interested in extracting a signal from the noise, right? So there's so much stuff going on out there on the internet, especially with regards to social networks. And so we're trying to take some of that information, make it relevant to journalists and newsrooms and to their publishers. So we look at a lot of social data as it pertains to news stories. And we track that information, extract meaning from it. We've built up a dashboard that editors, journalists, publishers can log into, get a quick overview of how their content's performing across different social networks, what's becoming popular, what's not, and then do the same for other news organizations that they may be interested in. So whether those are peers or competitors, so they can quickly get the jump on stories that are trending on social networks. And ultimately, what we're trying to do is close the loop between audience and the editors. So, you know, the editors have a very specific view on what stories are important, what the editorial priorities are, and this is why they get paid and why they play an important role. But often the audience might be interested in something quite different. And we're just trying to bridge that divide and give editors visibility over what the audience is doing.
And finally, to a great example of how journalists can find the signal in the noise by monitoring feeds and social media, but one that illustrates why the good old-fashioned journalistic method of picking up a phone to check a fact is still key in getting, verifying and breaking a story. David Wiley from Breaking News.
So one of the great examples of how we work on a day-to-day basis was the shootings in Colorado. I essentially just turned up to work one morning and seen on my own personal feeds that there were gunshots fired at a mall outside of Denver. And from that point, we really didn't know anymore, except that local news sites were on it, but they also didn't have a great deal of information either. So at that point, I had used keywords to try and figure out who was there and who was tweeting pictures and who was tweeting information about what was happening. So building up a picture of tweets from users in the area and a couple of photos of a lot of cop cars outside a mall, we could see there was actually a pretty serious situation, regardless of how little we knew. That you don't send, you know, 30 or 40 police cars outside a cinema for something small. So at that point, I became incredibly frustrated at the lack of details, as most journalists would do. And I decided to narrow the distance between me and the story. So with the internet, you have a great wealth of information, but you also have the responsibility to use it in your profession or trade. So I pulled up the number for the Colorado Police Department in Aurora. So it was the city police department. And because it was so early and overnight, there were no press officers on duty or public information officers, I got to speak to a dispatcher who gave me everything I needed to know. Because it was so early and it hadn't occurred to them that they didn't want to tell the press, and there is this great culture, especially in the lower levels of American police forces and at a statewide and a county level, that they will tell you what's happening because there's really no reason for them not to tell you, which is a great kind of noble way how to see things and not often how it's viewed in the UK. So they will quite often tell you everything you need to know, and they did. I remember turning to my boss and repeating what the police dispatcher had said to me when I asked how many people had been shot. I said, was it three or four? And I repeated that no, it was between 20 or 30 and probably a lot more. And at that point, you realise that it's a huge story that kind of it almost transcends, well, it does transcend social media, and you have to be more on top of the details than just looking for witness reports through Twitter. You go back to your journalistic training of not only conducting examples of what's happening and putting them together to show other people, but standing back and saying, I need to be really careful, this is a huge story, I have to be right. And I can see that there are things that I can do to verify the facts and figures, so I should be doing them. I shouldn't just be sitting in my chair looking at Twitter. If you can make a call and verify facts, you should. And for 99% of situations, you can make at least one call. If you are confused, there's no reason to necessarily blame your mistakes on other people's figures. You can just check for yourself.
For more on Signal Noise, NewsWhip Spike, Storyful and Breaking News, go to journalism.co.uk. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.